And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we interview legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Mark Stein's legacy spans over five decades, and he has influenced some of the most well-known rock bands and musicians. Mark Stein is known as the voice, keyboardist, and music arranger of the classic rock band Vanilla Fudge. Mark first founded Vanilla Fudge in 1966 at the age of 18 with members Tim Bogert, Vinnie Martell, and Carmen Appice. His new group, The Mark Stein Project, continues to share his music passion and stories. The Mark Stein Project is a true classic rock experience, performing the hit songs of all the great artists he's worked with, backed by a hand-picked, exciting array of young talent that kicks ass. The Mark Stein Project features Mark Stein on vocals and keyboards, Mark Hitt on guitar and vocals, Jordan Steinberg on bass and vocals, and Charlie Zeleny on drums. Touted by critics as one of the great voices in rock, alongside of Glenn Hughes and Joe Lynn Turner, the Mark Stein Project is a night of great music and storytelling. Discover a place where a song leads to a story and a story leads to a song. More than just a singer-musician, Stein is a skilled entertainer with the talent and charisma to take the crowd along for a wonderful ride of the classic rock experience. Stein has shared whiskey with Janis Joplin, sung with Michael Jackson, toured with Jimi Hendrix, and witnessed the dawn of Led Zeppelin. His first-hand storytelling that reflects on the history of rock gives the audience a you-are-there feeling that can only be told by someone who has lived it. The debut album, Vanilla Fudge, was the first of its kind to reach the top 10 on Billboard charts without a hit single. You Keep Me Hanging On was released 1 year later and went to number one on most radio playlists, both in America and all over the world. The psychedelic symphonic rock sound of the band was spearheaded by the Hammond organ and vocal style of Mark Stein. The Fudge have been heralded by critics as the doorway between pop music and progressive rock. Bands including Deep Purple, Yes, Uriah Heep, and even Led Zeppelin have said that Vanilla Fudge had a profound influence on them. Rolling Stone magazine wrote, "There was nothing even in 1967 like the 10-ton shock of this Long Island Quartet's cover of the Supremes' You Keep Me Hanging On with the lava flow sustain of Mark Stein's Hammond organ." Stein has toured and or recorded and appeared throughout his career with Dave Mason, Tommy Bolin, Alice Cooper, The Doors, Deep Purple, Rod Stewart, Carl Palmer, in a tribute to Keith Emerson, and Michael Jackson. The Mark Stein Project will be releasing a new EP and video to be released in 2018, so stay tuned for more details. Please welcome composer, arranger, keyboardist, author, and lead singer of the legendary Vanilla Fudge, Mark Stein, to the show. Hello, Mark.
How you doing, man? How do I follow that? What an incredible introduction, dude.
Yeah, we can wrap it up now.
Okay, all right, I'll see you later. Come to the show, May 6th, Westport.
I will. First of all, I want to say congratulations on the 50th anniversary of Vanilla Fudge in 2017, man. What? That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. We've managed to... to survive all kinds of stuff over the decades, and still out there, still rocking. People are still digging it, and feel blessed to still be here to still be doing it. Actually, so awesome.
You guys are awesome because you to me, you haven't changed much. The music hasn't changed. You guys' appearance hasn't changed. You went through the drug culture, and you're still standing. You look awesome. The only band that could kind of mirror you guys if they were still original members would be Grand Funk Railroad, you know, if Mark would get together, you know. And
yeah,
they still look pretty good. But it's amazing how you guys have stood the test of time, you know.
Well, again, we've been fortunate. We all, live, pretty normal lifestyles. We managed to see, drugs and alcohol far into our rearview mirrors many, many decades ago. And, and I think the desire to keep going, it's all part of the equation, you know.
You guys got to be one of the tightest bands around for the last 50 years as well. I mean, you can turn any song into an awesome, kind of psychedelic riff, rock and roll tune. I'm sure you can turn Tiptoe Through the Tulips into a really cool tune.
Well, that's an interesting story because once me and Tim Bogle were at Steve Paul Scene in the late 60s, and Tiny Tim was on the stage singing it. And you're bringing that memory back. That was a pretty crazy night, I think Hendrix was at one table, and David Clayton Thomas was, from Blood, Sweat, and Tears was at another table, and everybody was looking up at him and saying, why?
Why, exactly? I never understood that. Never understood that, Very strange.
Well, there was it was an experimental era in American history, okay?
Right. Well, lucky you, like we were talking before the show started, you've got the annual Rock Legends Cruise coming up on February 15th through 19th, which is already sold out. It's already sold out, like you said, before the tickets even go on sale. And it's basically Woodstock on the high seas. It's, Sammy Hagar, Bad Company, John Kay. I mean, what a lineup. Todd Rundgren, Uriah Heep, you guys.
Yeah. Sammy Hagar and the Circle are on it, and my buddies from Blue Oyster Cult, they're on it. And, it should be a blast. It should be a real fun time. And people just love it. They love connecting with all the artists. And, that's why these things sell out so early, because this is a chance for, people from that generation to, again, connect with the whole experience again, So it's great. It was a terrific idea, and it's working. It's been working for a while, and it will continue to work,
Oh, it's an awesome idea. I love these package deals, and you guys have appeared. There was Happy Together Tour. I saw you guys in Clearwater, I think with my buddy Pete Rivera from Rare Earth.
Pete's a good friend of mine, man. Yeah. I just talked to him recently. Yeah.
He's a good guy. He's really happy being a grandparent right now.
Yeah, me too.
When was your yours born? Your granddaughter or grandson?
My son, yeah. Yeah.
How old?
What, the grandkids?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Christopher is 12 and Melody is 10. And I actually about an hour ago I just picked her up from school. How do you like that?
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm going on number four now. My daughter is due in May, and we just had identical twin girls from my son's wife. So we're pretty busy as well.
That's awesome! Congratulations.
Thank you. There's nothing like being a grandparent, huh?
Yeah, it's cool because you play with them for a while and then you send them home.
Then you give them back, right?
Right.
Let's talk about the Mark Stein Project, a tribute to classic rock. Talk to me about that. You're going to be—you've already started like a mini tour. I think you started out in BB King's in New York.
Yeah, I mean the Mark Stein Project. I'm so excited about this band. I mean, it's just awesome. I got great players like you already mentioned, Mark Hitt and Jordan Steinberg and Charlie Z. It's just a. It's just a combination. I had this idea to go out and almost put this music, classic rock, audio documentary together, visually. Because I played with Alice Cooper. I played with Dave Mason in his heyday. Toured with Carl Palmer last year. I've appeared with Deep Purple. I played with Tommy Bowen. I've done all this stuff and Vanilla Fudge, And it's the songs that everybody loves to hear. We start the show out with School's Out, that I played in the Southern Hemisphere on the Welcome to My Nightmare tour. But we do it with this whole cool, funky, funkified midsection arrangement that people are freaking out over. And it's a great way to open the show. you know, and then I pay tribute to Dave Mason. You know, we just disagree. Well, I was a part of that whole era.
Right.
And, you know, and then I'm doing fight songs, and we're doing, you know, do a tribute to Keith Emerson like I did with Carl Palmer. We're doing Knife Edge. And this band is awesome, and they just play everything and sing everything great, and the energy is incredible. And so far it's been awesome. We've been getting amazing write-ups, and people are receiving us really well. And the buzz has been terrific. What can I say? You know, I'm a happy guy at my young age of, you know, 22.
Yeah, there you go.
but seriously, no, it's a total rebirth for me, and it's just real good music, man.
Now, do you have audience participation while you're doing the stories or anything like
Without a doubt. I mean, story leads to a song.
Cool.
One story leads to another song. A song leads to a story. Like the night. We got this killer arrangement of Stormy Monday Blues. It's a heavy rock, you know, power arrangement of it. And I tell a story when Janis Joplin and Johnny Winter jumped up on stage with Vanilla Fudge in 69 at the Palm Beach Pop Festival, and she shoved a bottle of Southern Comfort in my face and said, "Hey, you son of a bitch, take a swig of this and let's jam," you know. And it's all true stories, you know. And, you know, it's amazing. And nobody ever took any footage of that or recorded it. I mean, talk about a moment in history completely lost, but it's vivid in my imagine in my memory. So we go on and we played Stormy Monday. The people love it, you know. Tell the story about the tribute to Keith Emerson. We do Knife Edge, you know. I talk about how we, you know, how the whole thing would keep me hanging on, evolve. When I was listening to Diana Ross in the Supremes, would keep me hanging on. Came over the radio in 1966. I was sitting in front of the discotheque, the Cheetah, in New York City, smoking some kind of whatever it was, and you know, and I had this I just imagined how it would be slowed down. Went to work on it, started coming up with these, you know, with these ideas. One thing led to another, and the rest is history, you know. So we talk about all these things on stage, and people are just really into the whole thing, and then it's working pretty cool, man, you know.
Yeah, people want to hear the stories, especially there's so many guys that are not with us anymore. You mentioned Keith Emerson, Greg Lake, you know. I interviewed the whole band, and me and Keith, yeah, you know, hit it off pretty well, talking about the revolving piano from California Jam.
Well, yeah. Well, there's a story I talk about before we do Knife Edge. You know, I had a solo band in 71 after Vanilla Fudge first broke up, and we went to open for this new band that was just coming into prominence called Emerson, Lake & Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the Providence Arena, you know, 20,000-30,000 people.
Right.
So I'm at soundcheck walking up to my Hammond, and I see this, what is going on here? You know, I've heard about these things called synthesizers and moves and modules, and I see like all these keyboards, and I'm like, I was scared shit. I said, what's going on here? You know, it was Keith Emerson, the first time I ever saw anything like that, you know, and what unfolded. You know, our show was, I guess you could call it workmanlike. We were okay, but, you know, seeing them singing Lake & Palmer for the first time was just ridiculous. Musical and visual experience, it just really blew me away. And the irony of it all is you fast forward from 1971 all the way to 2017, and Carl Palmer sees me on the Jimmy Fallon show with Vanilla Fudge, and he says, "I want that guy because I'm going to do a tribute to Keith. I need a good singer and keyboard player." So he recruited me. I ended up doing a bunch of shows with him last year. And it went over great. People loved it. And that's a hell of a story. And it works great live, you know.
Yeah,
we go on to do Knife Edge. People love it, you know.
He's a real good guy. I like Carl. Did Deep Purple ever approach you when John Lord passed to play with Deep Purple?
No, they never approached me, man. But, you know, I know even Carl Palmer says I would have been the cat for that band. But Don Airey's great. He's also a friend of mine. Another story, Deep Purple were playing in Pompano Beach, Florida a few years ago. I emailed Ian Pace, you know, the drummer of Purple.
Yep.
He said, "It'd be great to see you, man, you know, come backstage," because we used to tour together in the early days, you know. And Don Airey comes up to me and says, "Hey, man, why don't you come up and play Smoke on the Water with us tonight?" I said, "Are you kidding?" I said, "I never played it before, you know." But I said, "What key is it?" He said, "Key of G." I said, "Cool. Glad it's not in C sharp or something like that, you know." But, yeah. I actually tell this on stage, and people love it, you know. So I went on and played Smoke on the Water with Deep Purple. I said, how many keyboard players can say they actually played with Deep Purple, you know, Smoke on the Water? But I did, you know, and it's also it's a glorious part of the night. And and Jordan Steinberg sings the shit out of it, man. Gives me a vocal break. He's, he's like a young Glenn Hughes, man. I kid you not.
Yeah.
You know, and he's really, really cool. And the young lady, he's a cool-looking dude, a young guy. You know? Great addition to the Marlstein Project. For sure, you know.
But let me tell you, man, you're a great organ player. You're a great pianist as well. You've always You've influenced so many people, you know. And Deep Purple might have not happened if it wasn't for Vanilla Fudge.
to be quite honest, the first time we played in England, way back, I was 20 years old, man, in 1967. They came to see us at a place called Finsbury Park. Where Traffic was on the show, and a band called The Herd, which was Peter Frampton, was a 16-year-old pop star, okay? And Vanilla Fudge was on the show, and Deep Purple, I don't even think they were called Deep Purple yet. I think him, John Lord, and Richie Blackmore came to see us, and they were, you know, they were knocked out. And they wanted to do what we were doing. They, in the early days, they were called the English Vanilla Fudge, and it's all documented. You know, you can read about it, you know, in rock history. But there's no doubt that we had a very powerful influence on Purple, for sure.
Well, every interview I've seen, you know, and I saw an interview that John Lord did. He talks about, you know, their influence was definitely Vanilla Fudge.
Yeah, without a doubt. Because, you know, Zeppelin, first time they came to America, they opened Vanilla Fudge, the first two tours. That was an incredible experience.
I've had Ken Hensley on the show, you know, from Uriah Heep, and I hear a lot of Heep in Vanilla Fudge as well. You know, I can see
that's
where
another,
Heap got
that's
a lot.
Another band that, right, that's another band that that obviously had listened to us as well, you know.
That alone is why you should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, just because of the
It's just weird. It's supposed to be about the influences, right, guys?
Yeah,
not how many hits you had, you know?
Yeah, doesn't make sense.
So what's it all about, Alfie? I mean, give me a break.
I had the same conversation with Susie Quattro because she influenced. I mean, if it wasn't for her, there wouldn't have been the Runaway, you know?
Yeah.
So
sure,
she should be in there as well, just for the influence. I don't get it. I never understood the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame too much. I guess your early influence was like the Rascals and then later the Vagrants, right?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. When I saw Felix Cavalieri when I was 18 years old, that was it, man. I had to get a Hammond organ. I saw him at a place called the Phone Booth, a discotheque in New York City.
That's right.
And this cat was the most soulful player and singer. I mean, the sound of that Hammond organ, I never heard anything close like that. And it was just shocking, you know. Just the most powerful influence in my early life. So my dad, you know, went out and went into debt and got me a B3 for $2,995 with a 124 Leslie. Went and parked it on Tim Bogart's porch in New Jersey.
Yep.
And, you know, just started playing around with it, learned how to use the drawbars, yada, yada. And, you know, and eventually went to see a band called The Vagrants that spawned Leslie West, you know.
Yep.
And that was the first band I ever saw that was taking songs and slowing them down and putting, you know, a production and drama behind it. And that completely just wore me out. I mean, that was it. That's what I wanted to do when I saw the Vagrants, you know. So ultimately, Vanilla Fudge was a mix of the blue-white soul of the Rascals and the production ideas of the Vagrants and on steroids, okay? So that was the two main influences on that first album, you know.
And maybe a little influenced by the Beatles, right?
Yeah, well, you know, we listen to Beatles all the time, you know. Revolver was my favorite Beatle album back in those days. Eleanor Rigby and Taxman, all that brilliant production, great songs. And, you know, we did a number on Eleanor Rigby. You know, we did a whole drama and opera with that thing.
It was incredible.
I'm pretty proud
of it. I love the way you guys do covers because it doesn't sound anything like the original, which is the way it should be. You know, you got your own style, and it's like a totally different song, but it sounds better.
I mean, in some cases, it's just a different adventure. You know, just daring.
Let's
they called
fun.
It daring, adventurous, and you know, we were called in the early days. We were called the biggest plagiarists on the planet. You know,
until
people started getting it, and so they started realizing what we were doing. You know. But today, I mean, to fast forward to today, I've been writing a lot of material, a lot of social songs. That's going to be on my new EP. That's going to be coming out in 2018. It's all going to be combined with the Mark Stein Project, and I'm excited about my new production, my new songs, and songs like Racism, songs like All Lives Matter, songs like Let's Pray for Peace, which I'm doing live and being received really well, you know. So
what are you guys going to add, guys,
and we're going to be driving this car, you know.
When are you guys going to add some more dates?
Well, the agency's working on it right now. We just finished B.B. King's and Daryl's house and Bull Run in Shirley, Massachusetts. You know, Daryl Hall came down to see the show.
Oh, yeah?
It was awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, and my buddy Steve Miller came to B.B.'s with his wife Janice, who I've known since he was a kid, you know. He loved the band, and a lot of cool people were down. From Matchbox 20 and Twisted Sister, a whole bunch of people came, had a nice crowd. And we're going to be playing with the Yardbirds May 6th at Westbury, you know, out in Long Island. We've got that. That's going to be a great show with Ken Heat and the Blues Magoos. Yeah, there you go. Another
the Blues Magoos.
Yeah,
he's still around, huh?
Yeah, Patrick Castro. He's a cool dude. Good friend, too. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
One thing I noticed, Vanilla Fudge was managed by the Lucchese crime family. Is that true?
Well, yeah, Philip Basile was part of the Lucchese family back then, and, you know, I mean, frankly, back in those days, man, it wasn't even so much as the, well, partly, of course, it was, you know, the music on the radio, which they helped to get us played, but it was all about who you were hooked up with, you know. I mean, you walked into a place, and, you know, you got, just like in the movie Goodfellas, you got the best table, you got the best food, you know.
So they
had a lot of power in those days, you know. I mean, especially in the music industry, and
I talked with Tommy James several times, you know. And we talked about Morris Levy
You heard a lot from him for sure.
Oh yeah, very interesting. Yeah. But you know what? He said if it wasn't for Morris Levy, there wouldn't have been a Tommy James. So he did.
Well, that's true. I mean, again, they had a tremendous influence on what got played on the radio.
Yep.
And, I mean, who knows? I mean, it might have been the same case with Vanilla Fudge, you know, because, you know, we got played a lot when that album first came out. You know, even helped us, I think, get on the Red Sullivan Show and all that good stuff, too. So, you know, I guess, again, it's all, you know, in retrospect, part of the equation, you know, so.
And you guys had your last show at the Action House. That was a cool place, but I understand. I mean, there's so many acts that play the Action House.
That was the hub of Long Island where everybody that was anybody played there, for sure.
That was the hangout. Last time I interviewed Carmine, I asked him how the idea was to cover the Supremes, You Keep Me Hanging On, and he says that was Mark and Timmy. He said we used to slow songs down, listen to the lyrics, and try to emulate what the lyrics were dictating. He said that was a hurting song. He said it had a lot of emotion to it. He said People Get Ready was like a gospel thing.
Mm-hmm.
Eleanor Rigby was sort of an eerie church-like thing. And he said like a horror movie kind of thing. But if you listen to Hanging On Fast by the Supremes, it sounds happy, but the lyrics aren't happy at all. So
they're not happy. That's why when I was listening to it, I was telling Tim, I said, you know, we were into our thing back then. And I said, this song might be great, slowed down. And he looked at me and says, well, you know, it could be, man. Why don't you go to work on it? Cause I used to come up with all the sketches for the arrangements, you know. And that's what I did. I just came up with that eerie, fluty organ thing, which if you listen to it, it's actually the melody of Set Me Free, Why Don't You, Babe, Slow Down, you know.
Right.
It's almost like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you know.
Yeah.
The original movie. And when they're in that cave and they hear that voice from way in the distance, and oh, no, she fell asleep. Oh,
yeah.
Remember? But that's how that started. And Vinnie Martell had this great, you know, Indian raga lick that he started playing. And you know, it just all came together. Tim and Carmine, they were incredible, you know, had great rhythm, bass, and drum ideas, and we all just had it just flowed together naturally. After a while, we knew we had something really special, and I guess the rest is history on that track, for sure. You know?
Well, My favorite version of People Get Ready is by you guys, and I actually saw Curtis Mayfield perform live and do it.
Yeah, he was awesome. What a great writer of his time.
Yeah, good writer. I mean, you had to get used to his voice, you know, but I still love the Vanilla Fudge version of that song. I saw you guys do it.
It's an interesting story with that, because when we were on tour in 68, Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Right.
Okay, and we were playing in New Orleans, you know, at this big sports arena. So, you know, I just innocently went up and, you know, I dedicated People Get Ready to Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
And my manager wanted to kill me. He said, don't you know where we're playing? You know, I said, well, I mean, I was whatever. They were throwing Molotov cocktails out of the stands and screaming and yelling. And that's the way it was, man. It was a time of racial, you know, crisis. And it was just an insane time in American history, you know.
Yeah, it was.
But, that was quite an experience, you know. I was actually on a plane. I was going from L.A. to San Diego in 68, I guess it was. Well, it had to be before, obviously, before he was taken down.
68.
The early part of 68. And I got off the plane, and I'm seeing all these lights and cameras, you know, getting off the plane. And I see Martin Luther King was on the plane in the front of the plane when he got off.
Really?
And they were interviewing him. I was on my way to San Diego because Fudge was doing a thing with Iron Butterfly back in those days, some shows, and I had a couple of days off, so I just took a little time off. But that was pretty cool, man. Yeah,
I remember those days like it was yesterday. When I was a kid, 68 was probably the most frightening year, you know, because Bobby Kennedy got shot, Martin Luther King, and,
oh, my God, one after another, yeah.
Oh, it was horrible. We had a family business in D.C. on F Street for years,
right,
since the late 50s,
right,
and the riots hit. And my dad, you know, had to empty out all the windows, and it was, you know, it was pretty bad. Bad scene all over. 68 was horrible.
Yeah, man, very intense time, man.
I remember it like yesterday. One of my favorite tunes also, and a fan favorite, is Break Song. Oh, my God. You guys really jam on that. What one of the fan favorite songs is the Break Song. That's
right.
An incredible jam by you guys.
Yeah, again, that was the night the Fudge played the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles. And you know who the opening act was that night?
Who?
Richie Havens.
Richie Havens, really?
Richie Havens, man. You know, he used to warm up the crowd for a lot of acts back in those days. And sounds like a pretty eclectic show, to say the least.
Yeah, definitely.
But he was awesome, man. I loved Richie. He had a great voice and that rich earthy thing about him, you know. But yeah, the Break Song, that was pretty cool. It showed off the solo prowess, I guess, of everybody in the band, and put together this pretty wild arrangement. And that's a pretty long. How long is that? About 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's just full of energy, man. It's such a great song.
Yeah, well, thanks, man. Yeah,
such a great song. Did you guys get asked to perform at Woodstock?
You know what? I think we did, and I remember we were doing a show with the late great B.B. King. Okay,
right.
Somewhere in Lower New England, and we heard about this thing Woodstock. You know, we weren't getting on. We were kind of, you know, at the end of our first time around, we were breaking up, and we had just done a couple of pop festivals. We did the Seattle Pop Festival. We did another one in Florida. So we didn't know. We just figured, you know, we don't want to do this again. You know, we didn't realize, you know, big mistake. You know, big mistake. We really missed out on that one. But, I was told that we were asked. I thought maybe we weren't, but I was told that we were.
You know. Yeah, that would have been right up your alley at the time, because that was 69.
Of course it would have been. Fucking idiots, you know?
That's when you guys were at your peak, I guess, around that time.
Yeah, well, we were kind of coming off the mountain at that time. But I mean, it was all, of course, it would have been the right thing to do, but it just didn't happen, man.
I want to give your album, the Vanilla Fudge album, Spirit of 67, 5 stars. I mean, I listened to that thing, and I haven't heard anything that good in years. I'll be honest with you.
You know, thanks so much. I am really proud of that, the arrangements and the production on it. And, you know, it was critically acclaimed, you know. It definitely was. And for some reason, I don't know, it didn't really sell that much. But
that makes sense. You know, it's just the time, you know. It's just
in this day and age, it's just so hard to sell records, man. You know?
It is.
Unless you're Adele, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
I want to tell the audience, Spirit of 67 by Vanilla Fudge has got so many great tracks on it. I heard it through the grapevine, The Letter, I Can See for Miles, Break On Through to the Other Side. They do a hell of a version of I'm a Believer. Doesn't even sound like I'm a Believer. It's so good. And Give Me Some Lovin', which is another favorite track of mine. It is an incredible album, 5 stars all the way. Everybody, you know, anybody that knows anything about rock music will love this album. It is tremendous.
You know, that all started with Cleopatra Records. Said,
yep.
You know, we'd like you guys to just pick songs from 1967, you know, and just do them your way. So we all got together. Everybody picked songs. And that was, you know, that's what was the fruit of our labor, the Spirit of 67. But, you know, I sat down at the piano and I, you know, I put this arrangement together for The Letter. And I said, well, I remember I was feeling like when Donna Summer started Last Dance.
Mm-hmm.
It started as a big piano ballad, remember?
Right.
And then it went into this big rhythmic thing. So that's kind of what inspired me to do that with The Letter, you know. If you listen, you can see a parallel there, right?
Exactly. The piano for the Letter and Ruby Tuesday, I love.
Ruby Tuesday is another. I just thought that came out great too, man. You know,
You do a wonderful job, and Give Me Some Lovin'. It just the beginning sounded like a Zeppelin opening.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Incredible album, and you wrote "Let's Pray for Peace," which is also on "White Magic" by your solo album.
Right. The thing with "Let's Pray for Peace" is I finally got it right. I do a different arrangement of it. I did it a few years ago with the Fudge at the Sweden Rock Festival, and basically we're doing it without drums now. It's just like keyboards and some light acoustic and a little bass with some little gospel vocals, and it's just really comes out great that way. That's how I'm doing it with the Mokestein Project now, and that's going to also be on my EP this year. So for sure.
Another good album, your solo album, White Magic, Natural High, a wonderful song.
Cool.
Your rendition of American Beautiful.
That was my singer-songwriter thing. That was way back in 2001. Yeah, thank you.
You know, you don't get nearly the credit you deserve as a vocalist, and neither does a band, actually. You know.
Well, you know, I don't know. It's I think I'm starting to get it now.
Good.
I'm getting a lot of exposure, getting a lot of play, a lot of interviews, and people who know who I am, you know, I've always been known as like a cult figure, and that's kind of, I'm trying to just get over that side a little bit, you know. So hopefully in 2018 with my new band and the new music, it'll help to do that, you know.
You just needed to get out there by yourself.
Yeah, well, that's what we're doing, you know. Again, the shows are going over great, and people are getting into it, so.
So you've got the Mark Stein Project, and you're still touring with Vanilla Fudge from time to time, right?
Right, when they ask us, yeah.
But you got the cruise coming. I'm sure you'll be out there.
We're doing Abbey Road on the River in May. That's like a Beatle Fest. That's going to be cool. And America is on the show, Vanilla Fudge and some other people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like sometime in mid-May, I think, you know.
How'd you end up singing with Michael Jackson on Save Me?
Well, I was recording an album called Old Crest on a New Wave, you know, with Dave Mason around 1980.
Right.
And we were in a studio called Hollywood Sound in L.A. And I had written a whole bunch of songs for that project for Dave and with Dave. And we were taking a break, and I went out to the hallway, and I know the Jacksons were down in the other studio recording. I see Michael Jackson hanging out by the soda machine, you know. So I went up and introduced myself. He was really a cool kid, you know. I said, dude, why don't you come in the studio and listen to somebody? We got this song called Save Me that was really modeled after like the rhythms on the Off the Wall album that you did, that great album that you did, you know. It was just before Thriller, keep in mind,
right.
You know. But Off the Wall was a multi-platinum great album. So he comes in, man. He comes in the studio. I told the engineer, I said, put the track up, man. Put up Save Me. And he just started dancing right in the studio, snapping his finger. He loved it. He was getting into it. I said, why don't you go out on the mic, man? We got a live mic out. Why don't you scat some vocals with me and Dave, you know? He does it. He goes out, puts the earphones on. I'm looking at the engineer. I said, can you believe what's going on here? You know? And he was awesome. And that's what happened. That's how he got on that album. And it's just amazing that I thought for sure, because of that, that was going to pull that record to the top, man, you know, on Columbia.
Yeah.
There was some kind of political crap that went down. He really wasn't supposed to do it. And, you know, some legal shit, you know. But anybody wants to hear that, man, Save Me by Dave Mason, just Google it. And you can hear Michael and Dave, and you can hear me on there. And it's a great song written by the late, great Jim Krieger, who wrote We Just Disagree as well.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the story behind that, man.
Wow. Yeah. Dave's another cool guy. He does a lot for the vets, Dave Mason.
The veterans, yeah. Ted Knapp's a good friend of mine. He spearheads all of that.
Yeah.
You know, he's got Dave doing that. He's always coming and say hi to me and got me involved in that as well. So it's a great cause, you know.
Yeah, Dave told me the story about him and Steve Winwood, how Steve just stopped talking to him one day, and that was it. That was the end of the relationship between him and Steve Winwood. He was always mad at him. He thought he might have been jealous because Dave was writing, you know, a lot of the songs in the beginning.
Right, yeah, I know. There's always a weird vibe between them, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just a crazy thing, you know.
I'd like to know what happened to his accent. I guess he's been here a long time.
What?
His accent, you know, because he was raised in England.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was in America for so many years.
Yeah.
I don't know why he won't call me back, you know. I'm trying to get in touch with Dave, you know. I'll say hi, man. Give us a little hug, you know. Come down, you know. We can do some shows together. But David is David, you know. What can I tell you?
Yeah, exactly. I was fortunate to see Tommy Bolin play with the James Gang and Deep Purple. And I chatted with Billy Cobham. We talked about the Spectrum album. And I know Stanley Shelton.
Oh, what a awesome drummer, man, yeah.
Yeah. So, what was your experience with Tommy? How you worked with Tommy?
Tommy was amazing. I was spending some time with the family, you know, in Southern California, in the early '70s. I was writing songs. I was trying to, you know, put a solo trip together. And I said, man, I gotta get back on the stage, you know. And I heard of this young phenom by the name of Tommy Bolin, like you had mentioned. He was in Deep Purple, replacing Richie Blackmore, and I heard he was leaving Purple. He was going to put his own solo band together, and he was assembling all these great players. And I said, I have to get involved in this, man, you know. So a friend of mine, Reggie McBride, who was playing bass with Stevie Wonder, you know, got the gig, and he told Tommy that I was available looking for something, and we hooked up. I went down to SIR, you know, in L.A., and we jammed and we played, and everything worked out. I got in the band, and Narda Michael Walden, fresh out of the Mahavishnu Orchestra, was on drums. And we had Norma Jean Bell, great singer and sax player. That was from, you know, Frank Zappa's band, you know. And it was an incredible bunch of musicians. And, you know, I mean, everybody in the beginning came to see that band. Jeff Beck, you know, John McLaughlin, you know, Jan Hammer, all the progressive rock fusion dudes. And it was an amazing buzz going on. It was so short-lived, you know. And then we went in and recorded an album called Private Eyes, which was critically acclaimed. That was a very special sounding record. I played keys on that and arranged a lot of the vocals. But in my show, in the Mark Stein Project, I talk about Tommy and I dedicate a song called Dreamer, which I think was on the Teaser album. I'm not sure.
Yep.
I think it was on the
Teaser
album. Mm-hmm. But I love singing, and we just really do a nice job with that song. People loving it, man. You know, it's a real cool addition to the momentum of what we're doing. You know, so I'm very happy.
Yeah,
with that.
Everyone says Tommy was such a nice man.
He was a great kid. You know, he just couldn't.
Yeah.
Just couldn't overcome his demons. You know.
Yeah.
And 25 years old, man, he was gone. You know, amazing.
It's crazy.
Yeah, he would have gone on to be one of the true greats. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, not only as a player, but as a writer. He's an incredible songwriter, too, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a great loss.
And you ate pizza with Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, God. I ate pizza with a lot of cats, man. But I did eat pizza with Hendricks. Oh, yeah, we toured with Hendricks. We did, like, I don't know, 15, 18 shows, man. So we hung out. You know, we used to hang out, you know, in the hotel rooms. And of course, there was a time when I was hanging with Mitchell and Noel Redding in the wee hours of the morning in Tucson, Arizona, and Jimmy comes walking in, and he has a couple of acetates under his armpit, you know, and he's got this Webcork type of record player with the two speakers that unhook, you know, the vinyl, plays vinyl, you know, it's 1968. So he says, I want you to hear this new record that I was about to get past. It was called Electric Ladyland, okay?
Oh,
and he
man.
Puts on The Gods Made Love, you know, and here I am, 21 years old, listening to something that was about to be a classic rock epic, you know, and I'm hearing it before anybody ever heard it. You know?
Incredible.
In retrospect, it was an incredible experience, you know. Too young to know at the time what I was really getting into, but that's a great story with Hendricks, for sure. You know?
Man, that's one dude I wish he, you know, he was still around, because, you know, he was into so many different things in music, you know, and he would have changed into... Morton is so many different ways, you know, if he kept on going. And
yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what he would have been into. You know?
Oh, man, the music industry needs a guy like him, you know. It just take it over, you know, and show him what good music's all about. But now we got the Mark Stein Project, so.
Yeah, we got the whole thing
out. Mark, here's a question I ask everybody. It's interesting. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Wow, that's a good question.
And you've been around everybody, so I know it's hard.
To perform and collaborate with anybody that's from the past?
Living or dead. It could be back in the Beethoven days, you know. And
yeah, right. Well, I'll tell you what. I would love to sit down and arrange some stuff with Jimmy Page, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, he was not only one of the great guitar player from Zeppelin, but he was an amazing producer.
Right.
And his ideas were just incredibly creative, obviously. And I know he kind of felt that way about me in the early days, so I would love to do a record with him, you know, for sure, you know.
I could see that happening. That would make sense, actually. It would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I mean, I think he would be into the new stuff I'm doing. And I mean, it's so many people. I mean, my God, so many people.
What a super band that would be, you know, if it was Paige, you.
Lynn Hughes on bass and vocals.
There you go.
Me on keyboard
I don't know,
and
I like,
vocals.
But,
and,
well, you would have to trade vocals with Glenn, because your vocals
man,
are...
And, yeah. Right. And how about Ian Pace on drums? You know, I don't know. I know all these guys.
That would work.
That would work. Yeah. Right.
But still, yeah. Carmine's still one of my favorite drummers.
Yeah, Carmine's been rocking, man. He's been rocking
he's
a
awesome.
Long time. He's still great. He's one of the innovators. You know, he started the whole clinic touring thing and heavy rock drums. He influenced many drummers, including John Bonham and a lot of people, for sure, you know.
He's done a lot with Rod Stewart, you know.
He took a whole different turn with that and just got more into studio playing and did a great job on a lot of those tracks, for sure, yeah.
Yep. Mark, you got anything else to add?
Well, I just want everybody to check out the Mark Stein Project. It's a musical journey. And just want everyone to have a terrific 2018. We're early into the year. Be safe. Look over your shoulder. Enjoy your loved ones. Enjoy your family. And all the best to everybody out there in Radio Land, you know.
Well, we hope you come to Florida for sure. Look me up when I'm in Florida. If you come to Florida, I'll look you up. And
good,
make sure I go to the show.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
And, thank you, Mark.
Stay safe, guys. All the best, okay?
Thank you so much for being on the show and for all the great music, man. Good
well,
luck with the Mark Stein
welcome.
Project. And like I said, we hope to see you make a few stops in Florida as well.
Sounds good to me, man.
All right, Mark. Take care, man. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. For more information about Mark Stein and the Mark Stein Project, visit Mark's official website at www.mark/stein.com or Mark's Facebook page at www.facebook.com/markstein.vf. Visit the official website for the Vanilla Fudge at www.vanillafudge.com or the Vanilla Fudge Facebook site at www.facebook.com/vanillafudgeofficialsite. You can purchase Mark Stein's latest book entitled You Keep Me Hanging On at Amazon.com and also Spirit of 67, the critically acclaimed album by Vanilla Fudge, which is also available at Amazon.com. Very special thanks today to Ann Layton of Layton Media Music Services Motivation for arranging this interview with Mark Stein. And as always, thanks to Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of the Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at theRayShashoShow@gmail.com. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. You will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by The Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.